55.
What did you do?
Jacqueline shouts, vocal for the first time, probably because she suspects what has happened, even though she's still strapped down and unable to turn and look.
Who did you shoot? Elias!
Still here.
The younger Langdon holds his hand over the wound on his front side, but he can't do anything about the exit wound on his back. My instinct is to help him. With proper medical attention, the wound is survivable if the bleeding can be stemmed. But I don't think his older self will allow that to happen. He wants Jacqueline to himself, even if she's a prisoner. At the same time, I want to leave. Not just because future Langdon could mow us all down, but because I don't like how Tsul Kalu's body absorbed that blood.
You should go,
the wounded younger Langdon says.
I'm not worth your lives.
Elias,
Jacqueline says through tears, making her elder husband grimace with annoyance, no doubt because he has just saved her life. But she's more concerned about the man who he knows failed to do so. Future Langdon rotates the rifle from one person to another, flinching when the weapon and his eyes turn toward the pre-human. It's no longer looking out the window, no longer distracted. It's facing him, head lowered, body poised to pounce. When they make eye contact, the creature bares its teeth and hisses. Sensing Future Langdon is about to shoot, I step between them, arms raised.
Whoa, whoa, whoa!
My concern isn't just for the strange beast ripped from the past. If Future Langdon pulls that trigger, I suspect he will not stop until we're all dead. When he holds his fire, I turn to face the creature. Its bared teeth and furrowed brow instill a deep sense of fear. I manage to say one more, whoa, trying to emanate calm. The creature's black eyes burrow into me. I can feel it in my head. Is this how its species communicates? Having already seen it control the younger Langdon's mind, I have no doubt. For a moment, I consider trying to have it control the elder Langdon, but if its influence on his actions is not immediate, he might still gun us down. So I imagine the prehuman leaving with us, calmly, without incident. Its expression softens. Then it looks toward the door. Yes, I say, nodding, despite the fact that both word and gesture are meaningless. Assuming anything with arms and hands understands a pointed finger, I motion to the exit. Go, please. I'm not sure if it understands anything other than how I feel, but it looks at the door, then back to me, and then to future Langdon. There's a moment of stillness, and I can sense it thinking about what to do. Then it wisely turns toward the door and starts walking. It moves with surprising grace and silence, its long body slipping through the air like a blade. My eyes are drawn to the red blood on its back, already starting to dry. I trace it back to the creature's shoulder, but the wound is gone. Like us, this thing was healed by whatever it was we encountered at the beginning of everything. Cosmic energy, God, both. All I really know is that it wasn't nothing, and it wasn't an accident.
Who touched my garments? What the hell does that mean?
We're leaving, I say, backing up so I'm standing in front of Owen again. Strange that I'm protecting him from a man with a gun rather than a monster out of the Cretaceous.
Owen,
Cassie says, the tone of her voice saying, we can't let him get away with this.
Leave,
the younger Langdon says. When she looks down at him, he flicks his eyes toward Tsul Kalu. He's noticed what I have, the subtle rise and fall of the hunter's charred chest, the twitch of a pulse on the side of his neck. The beast is in shock, but not dead. And if he comes to while we're all lingering about, it will be a bloodbath. Cassie understands, as do the others. Without complaint, we follow the prehuman toward the door. It ducks down and maneuvers itself through the hatch without grazing the sides. I can't begin to figure out what we're going to do with the thing, and I can't imagine how strange all of this must be for the creature. Could it have any concept of science and technology? It did use the younger Langdon to open a biometric lock, so it either understood the tech or his thoughts on how to use it. Maybe both. More importantly, the creature has shown itself to be intelligent and capable of empathy, wonder, and curiosity. It might not look like Homo sapiens, but it is more human than the broken man who tore us through time. The real problem is that if we reveal the prehuman's existence to the world, it will receive none of those attributes in return. It doesn't deserve that fate. Tsul Kalu, on the other hand,
he can go visit his father in hell. And he can take future Langdon with him. The elder Langdon escorts us toward the door, weapon trained on my back. That he didn't just kill us reveals the man's strange dichotomy. He's not a blatant murderer. He doesn't want to pull the trigger, but he has no trouble sacrificing the lives of people he can't see. The generations of Black Creek residents have been dead for a long time. He might view killing them in the vacuum of creation as returning things to the way they were, but that's not accurate. If this is a new dimension of reality, then all of these people have new lives to live, new futures. And if they are dead... A cold hand wraps around my heart, the anger kindled by my father's death returning. Not yet, I think. His time is coming. Get everyone out. I lean to the side and spot the elevator at the end of the short, barren hallway. The doors are a ruined mess. The spot where the car should be is an open void. The prehuman steps into the open space, bracing itself with hands, feet, and tail, fearless over the drop. Then it surprises me by reaching out a hand. "Tarnation," Levi says and turns to me. "Ain't no way." "In here I thought you'd grown a pair," Cassie says. "Hey," he starts, but whatever argument he was about to make is quashed when she steps around him and reaches out her hand. The prehuman guides her to the edge. Its tail snakes up out of the hole and wraps around her waist. "Be gentle," she tells the thing and then to me. "See you downstairs." She's lifted up and lowered from view. I grasp Flores's arm, whispering, "Get them downstairs and outside. If shit goes sideways, get them off this mountain and out into the world." "I'll get it done," he says, "assuming there is a world out there." When I see Owen freezing up, just outside the prehuman's reach, I say, "You can do it. Oh, I'll be right behind you." He gives me a withering look, his strong will drawing the line at intelligent dinosaur tail rides. Then he waves and takes a step closer, allowing the tail to wrap around him and whisk him away. When I turn back to face the elder Langdon, he snaps the rifle up toward my face. A twitch of the finger is all that separates me from the afterlife. "What do you think you're doing?" "Offering you one last chance at redemption," I tell him. "Let me take them." "And all will be forgiven?" He scoffs. "I know you better than that. I know you blame me for your father's death." "He died in 1985, I say, which is the truth, but also not. Not anymore. He died less than an hour ago. Again, because of..." I force my rising emotions back down, focusing once more on the living. I motion to the younger Langdon, now lying still on the floor, one arm pinned under his body. "Him living or dying won't change anything for you. But everything for her..." He motions to the chair in which his wife is still held prisoner. I can hear her crying. Behind me, Flores is lifted up and transported down the elevator shaft. The prehuman directs its gaze toward me, waiting. There's a stab of pain in my head, and then an intense feeling of being rushed. It's telling me to hurry. Tsul Kalu is waking up. But the creature doesn't have the full picture, doesn't sense the smaller pieces coming together. And neither does future Langdon. "You think she's going to choose you because you're the last man standing?" I ask. "Does that sound like the woman you married?" His face spasms a bit. Driven by a broken mind, he hasn't considered the logic behind any of this, hasn't given thought to the ramifications of his actions on the people involved, the world or universe at large, or even the woman he's supposed to be saving. "She will be grateful, in time." My response is subtle. A raised, doubtful eyebrow. But it's enough to make him consider his future and not like what he sees. His eyes fill with fury as his finger tightens around the trigger. "She will choose me because she will have no other choice." "Yes," the younger Langdon says, rising up behind his counterpart as I drop to the floor. "She will." He plunges the knife dropped by Tsul Kalu into his older self's back. The AR-15 unleashes a torrent of bullets as future Langdon screams in pain and flails back. The weapon falls from his hand as he drops to the floor. He claws at his back, trying to reach the blade that hasn't killed him yet, but certainly will if he manages to pull it out. The younger Langdon clings to the wall, blood-soaked and barely standing. I look down the hall toward the confused and somewhat aghast prehuman. "Help him!" I shout, and then I charge back into the penthouse, Langdon's AR-15 in hand. I round the chair holding Jacqueline. Her face, normally so calm and pleasant, is streaked with mascara tears, and it's twisted with emotion. She looks up at me with sadness and regret.
"Oh, Mr. McCoy, I tried so hard,"
she says,
"to not upset him, to keep him calm, to find his soul, but there was nothing left of him, of my husband."
"Your husband?" I unbuckle the belt across her waist. She couldn't reach it because her hands were zip-tied together. "Is alive." I pull her to her feet, and on his way outside. A raspy breath cuts through the room's air. "Which is exactly where we need to be." I pull her to her feet and guide her toward the exit. The other Langdon, knife still in his back, reaches for us as we pass. "Jacqueline, please, I—" A swift kick from his wife silences him. She hurries past, enters the hallway, and screams. She throws herself into me, trying to flee from the prehuman, which she has yet to see. "He's with us," I tell her.
"No, no, no."
The poor woman has endured a lot, but she really has no choice here. To linger means facing Tsul Kalu trapped in the equivalent of a human-sized fishbowl, sans the water. I put her up over my shoulder and carry her to the prehuman. She trembles when it takes her, but she manages to contain her scream as she's lowered from sight. When I head back to the penthouse, a pulse of pain in my head conveys frantic concern. "Almost done," I say, and then I crouch by future Langdon. He stops reaching for the blade and looks up at me, eyes imploring. "If you pull that out, you'll die quickly, and as much of an asshole as you are, I'll be rooting for you." I place the AR-15 on the floor and shove it a few feet away. He's confused until I turn my attention to Tsul Kalu. Sheets of charred skin flake away, the flesh underneath slowly moving. A ragged growl builds inside his chest. It's taken a while, but the monster is regenerating. He wasn't welcome at the moment of creation, but he wasn't killed either.
"No,"
the elder Langdon says,
"you can't."
"How many times did you hear those words in the 7 years leading up to this moment?" I ask, standing up. The question hits home and he starts to cry, but all that regret burns away the moment I step back into the hall and start to close the door.
"I'll kill you," he screams. "I'll destroy your family tree. I'll make you watch. Don't you dare."
His voice is cut short when the door closes and the lock engages, sealing both monsters inside together.